And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also go to the website, www.guardiantalkradio.com, and you can live stream the show. Now, also, Guardian has been very nice, and they're letting us get MP3s of the show after it's aired. So if you just got in the car and you're like, oh, gosh darn, I missed the beginning, or you just got somewhere and you're like, oh, this is so interesting, I want to stay and listen to the rest, and you can't, you can go to the NAGB website after the show has aired and you can listen to the show again. So just go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs, and find the page for Blank Canvas. So I'm with two of the artists from the National Exhibition, the NE8, which is on at the National Art Gallery right now and will run until the middle of April. And those artists are Margot Bethel and Leanne Russell. Leanne is an artist from Abaco and Margot is based here in New Providence. We're very pleased that this NE has, I think, like, many. I think we've got several Grand Bahamians. We have a couple of artists from Abaco.
Five from Abaco alone.
Long Island. From Abaco alone. Wow. Really a lot, actually. A couple from Long Island. So it's really,
And then others from the diaspora, like for
and then for people that are living outside of the Bahamas. So yeah, definitely Bahamian artists living in the United States. So it's really nice to know. And some were surprising because, you know, there are people that were maybe born in New York, or, you know, not New York, born in the U.S., or maybe born to a foreign father and can't actually live here. And so they actually weren't really part of, I know, let's not get down that story. They aren't kind of part of the everyday community, right? And some really heard about the open call because we announced the open call widely as we can and sent in. And so, you know, we discovered a couple of artists who are of Bahamian descent, but, you know, that are actually like five or six generations Bahamian, but because they were born somewhere else to a foreign father, are apparently not anymore. And so, you know, it was really interesting to, like, welcome them into the community as well, and to see the work they're doing, which is still, like, very engaged with, you know, national issues, because of course that is even one of them. It's like, you know, who gets to belong? And I think, you know, both of your work sort of, you know, deals with those issues of, like, you know, feeling like you belong and being whole. So you said before that you didn't get to finish on your whole. What's the title of your work?
It's easier for me to talk about the H-O-L-E than it is to talk
about the W-H-O-L-E.
Because the W-H-O-L-E is always a potential in a way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But part of the trick of the mirror and having this play that you said, you mentioned that the object looks one way when you see the outside of it, but when you look in the mirror, you see the underbelly of it, and that's kind of, you know, a metaphor, I guess, of also something I think is a feminine, you know, the soft quality of our bodies in a way.
And all the hidden things are actually not supposed to talk about, too.
Right, exactly.
I think it's really interesting that in the 21st century, there's so many things that we're not supposed to talk about as women, you know, and things that are just bodily functions, one being miscarrying, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're supposed to not tell anyone for 3 months, and if you do, don't tell anyone, you know? And I'm like, why? Why? Like,
I mean, I guess it's a personal choice as well, but, you know, how well you are want to deal with making something like that public.
No, absolutely.
Trauma of it. But,
it's a horrible trauma, because I'm very happy to say that it happened to me between my two kids. I miscarried. Right. And I made the big, quote-unquote mistake, because the doctors always like, don't tell anyone. Of, you know, immediately calling all my family, because my first pregnancy was so easy. And, and then when it didn't happen, I had to call everyone and say, and I was so grateful I had to make those calls, because otherwise I would have been all alone with my husband.
Right.
Being miserable.
That's a good point.
And the support I got from that network, because I hadn't told everyone. I told my sister and my mother and a couple of girlfriends, and, you know, that support I got, and then to realize that it's so common. Mm-hmm. But because no one talks about it, you don't realize it's so common.
Menopause was like that for me.
Yeah, exactly. And menopause,
mom,
too. And
my husband wasn't here, and it, you know.
Yeah, and we're supposed to, like, to not expect. Talk about it and, you know, cover it up. And if you're having a hot flash, like, go to another room so you don't make everyone else feel awkward. And you're like, well, I'm sorry I'm making you feel awkward.
But that actually relates to the whole H-O-L-E aspect of the piece, which is, you know, sometimes people refer to the whole in the bucket or the bottom of the bucket, because there's a quote that I just was used that I got from a friend actually who went to the archives and claimed it as a Bahamian proverb, but it's also actually lyrics out of one of Bob Marley's songs. Every day the bucket goes to the well, one day the bottom drop out. And so I think that's the other thing I wanted to talk about in the piece. So another layer of it is our psychological and mental mm-hmm. and psychological well-being and health, and what happens when the bottom drops out
mm-hmm.
and sort of things erode over time, and, mm-hmm. and then you find yourself, you know, it could be a miscarriage, or it could be even menopause, a, mm-hmm. a dramatic change, mm-hmm. or anything. It could be any trauma is kind of the bottom of the bucket.
Yeah, sure.
Dropping out, and
but it's interesting how a lot of female traumas are still considered kind of taboo to talk about. And even talking about, like, you know, for some people, you know, having their period is pretty, you know, like, there are women that, like, really, really suffer. I'm lucky that I'm not one of them. But, you know, and that's also kind of like, you know, you can't really talk about that either. And so it's interesting how, like, this silencing of, and I think that kind of comes up in your work too, right? Is this idea of silencing.
Exactly.
And that's of silencing, you know, people that are different or people that feel they need to express themselves in another way. Mm-hmm. And how damaging that can be mentally. Because, again, like, when your bottom falls out physically, then your body can really fall out mentally because you can't talk about it. And I thought, you know, even this, the vocabulary, like miscarriage, I'm like, oh, did I do it wrong? Did I carry it wrong? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, this is, no, I think that's great. And again, I think women in general, and this is one of the things I wanted to talk about in the piece as well, is that, you know, women labor in so many ways, mm-hmm. you know, are asked to, and have a certain utility mm-hmm. In the world and social
mm-hmm.
In many social contexts, and but so much of what women do, bearing children, carrying children, bearing children, laboring in certain ways, mm-hmm. Is invisible
mm-hmm.
or made invisible.
Yeah, it's made. I think it's made invisible.
It's not acknowledged, and it's not that, you know, there should be, you know, an award show for mothers. It's
not
about that. It's kind of a daily awareness of what women contribute.
Well, what's quite interesting is that when you see a lot of dads now get much more involved, which is awesome, and mm-hmm. I have a husband who's a very, very involved dad, and he does a lot too, but I remember when they were small, I'd get so annoyed because if we were in a restaurant and I was like in the middle of my food, he'd be like, oh, I'll take her to the bar. Don't worry, I'll take her. I'll go change that diaper. And inevitably, everyone in the restaurant would be like, oh, look at that dad. And I'd be like, if I got up and took her to the bathroom, nobody would be like, oh, look at that mother. You know, so I think, you know.
But you can have another job as well.
Yeah.
And no one will say, wow, you know.
Yeah. Oh, she's doing two jobs. Exactly. So it's true that a lot of women's work, you know, cooking, cleaning, mm-hmm. caring for children, is just sort of assumed.
Correct.
And not really.
And on top of that, we have to, you know, look a certain way as well, which is more time and effort and, you know. It's something to look at and think about
mm-hmm.
why we do it, but because it is, you know, it's something that's imposed in many cases, as you said, mentioned, you know, mm-hmm. and we're conditioned in certain mm-hmm. ways. So I think looking at this conditioning and what it means, and what we want, do we want to change that narrative,
mm-hmm.
you know, or mm-hmm. those ways in which we're
mm-hmm. Absolutely
perceived.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I see some continuity. There's a lot of connections between your two works, but also, Leanne, I see some continuity between that piece you did for the NE6, which was, you know, this woman who felt like a non-belonger, who felt different mm-hmm. somehow, mm-hmm. which seemed, you know, also we talked a little bit about that you know, personally, how it is to be, you know, a white bohemian growing up on an out island, and that feeling of sort of non-belonging that happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. So also more when you go away and suddenly, you know, mm-hmm. people are like, what's that accent? Yeah. But it seems like, did this piece, the new piece with the muddle and match, was that kind of born out of that somehow? Because it seems like it started with just a woman and a woman's feeling of how to belong, and it's kind of spread its wings and reached out to a larger community.
We talked about that before the show, how you know, pieces kind of evolve, but then also how after time you go back and mm-hmm. look at old work mm-hmm. and you're like, wow, I didn't even know that mm-hmm. I was conveying this message.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, NE8 or NE7 we were kind of challenged to be introspective and mm-hmm. tell our own story.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it kind of was an evolution mm-hmm. because that was my story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The freak show element of it mm-hmm. and
One, of course, is hybrid person again.
Yeah,
this kind
exactly.
of fish woman.
Yeah.
Who I only am now thinking, as I'm looking at your work with the pictures, mm-hmm. that can have something to do with like gender identity and like the pieces you're assigned, let's say. And but you know, I of course I always think about mermaids as such this Bahamian, you know, mm-hmm. so it's taking this like very Bahamian folkloric tradition.
Yeah.
But suddenly for me it's like been assigned this new meaning.
There was a duality to that too. That was actually fashioned after a Brent Malone piece.
Mm-hmm.
But also it was the transgender panel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Holly during installation mm-hmm. about, mm-hmm. you know, there's a strong connection with transgender children and mermaids, just because it's, mm-hmm. you know, the asexual aspect
mm-hmm.
of it,
mm-hmm.
non-gender assignment and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, I found that.
Or the genitalia, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
theoretically,
you only know what gender a mermaid is.
Exactly.
It's chest. But
yeah,
you know, I think everyone's always like,
yeah.
How do they make more?
Like,
how do they make? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know. You're like, how do they make small mermaids?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Where do they come from?
Exactly. That's always the question, right?
Yeah. So, of course, because of that, there's, you know.
You know it is. I mean, come on.
I'm not allowed to talk about that.
Yeah. But it was kind of an evolution.
That's really interesting, though. I didn't know children identified that way.
Yeah. So the mermaid, to me, in the first piece, meant something. It was very important to me.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
then realizing that this imagery and symbolism can mm-hmm. mean something completely different to
mm-hmm.
someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of Easter eggs in there. A lot of people. I had someone come up to me in the show and say, "Is that the sea nymph? Like, is your character modeled after the sea nymph?"
Mm-hmm.
And the muse, the live model that I used for it, she was actually there that night, and people came up to her. So there were different dialogues around the piece, which I thought was interesting. So outside of actually touching the piece and changing it, people were kind of questioning the symbolism behind each thing.
And I think what's quite interesting too is that they've all got halos.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're all sort of, the idea is that they're all somehow sacred.
Exactly.
But also maybe like martyrs.
Also martyrs.
Yeah.
The piece was originally going to be the seven deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
What Bahamians consider
mm-hmm.
seven deadly sins. And
mm-hmm.
it was going to be, and it's still going to evolve into this.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a piece that's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was rape culture and, you know, toxic masculinity and these seven characters.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the moral luck aspect,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone is kind of exempt from morality that we as a Christian nation kind of push onto people.
Yeah.
So, like you said, sainthood and the martyrdom and, mm-hmm. and all of that. Yeah, that was definitely a play.
But, you know, we have such a weird relationship with morality, right? Because
of
on
course.
The one hand, you know, it's like there's so much licentiousness and things
mm-hmm.
that are accepted as just, oh, how it is. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, you know, it's like, oh, you know, don't wear your low-cut dress to go vote.
Yeah.
You know, like, or encourage you to vote. So it's just this constant mix of messages,
yeah.
Which I think are like very confusing, right,
of
for
course.
Everybody. And I think as women too, right? You're sort of, you know, hold it all together, but be delicate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do the hard work, but look great. And you're like, oh, which one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of ghost moves going on in this.
Yeah. It's very, very contrarian society we live in.
I love that little ghost move.
Yeah. Have secrets because it's too small.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you know,
yeah, definitely.
It's a scale.
Yeah. And I thought that was quite interesting about the work too, is a sort of idea of being observed in your piece with a flipbook,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's also something that here you just touched on, Margot, as a small society. Like, it's just, you're so observed all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? And you feel this idea that people like have this flipbook that they're making a story, and you're like, you know, I'm like,
yeah.
I heard this, or
just
I saw you did that, and
yeah.
so, you know, and these ideas come on, you're like,
mm-hmm.
sorry, what?
Yeah.
You know? And I thought that was quite interesting as well, that, like, you know, outsiders can decide what your story is.
Exactly.
You know, or people visiting, just
mm-hmm.
rent, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they'll...
That's a really cool perspective of that piece.
Yeah, I enjoy that.
Yeah
they'll make up the story, right?
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, that's That's the truth.
And that becomes your narrative. And that's often how it is, especially living in Abaco. Mm-hmm. You know, people get threads of of hearsay and, you know, different facets of your personality. Yeah. And they compose this person that that they feel like you are. And you often get stuck with this label.
And I would imagine also just label artist is already something that brings a certain amount of. Do you find that? Like, if you do you just say to people, well, I'm an artist, or do you say I'm a carpenter? Because, you know. To just deflect the
no, I yeah. Usually people say you look like an artist. So I but
which is funny because I get that as well. So
and right? And since it's radio, I'll just say two very different looking women with like different styles, and I think it's probably because you're both very unique in your style. Do you know what I mean? I think there's that. There's like, you know, there's a certain sense of like. Yeah.
But it just goes to show you that there's this whole spectrum, you know, regardless of people saying if they're going to try and box you in with one look, there's it's not always as myopic as what we feel like it might be, but there is still that underlying,
Thread.
Like you said, there's anyone who's kind of a little left of the center, like
a bit different, a bit different
then they're gonna say, oh yeah, I knew you were an artist, there's there was something off about you.
Oh well, there you go. So well, I guess we'll end on that note. So were there three off women in the room? But anyway, I just want to thank you both for being here. The work is really beautiful and raises so many like interesting threads for discussion. So thank you so much, and I'm going to look forward to both of the. I want more buckets and more characters to see where these. It's always really interesting to check in with artists and see how these evolutions are happening in the thought process. So
thank you.
You know, thank you both for being here.
Thank you,
Mom. And for the audience, just, you know, the little housekeeping, as always, the National Art Gallery is open from Tuesday through Sunday, so both days over the weekend. Tuesday to Saturday, it's 10 to 5, so there's time to come after school. Children are always free, so they can always come after school and come into the gallery and look around. And on the ground floor, we have a collection from the permanent exhibition, which has all the great names from history, Eddie Minnis, Brent Malone, Jackson Burnside, Stan Burnside, Max Taylor, and it's a very nice show called From Columbus to Junkanoo, so you can just see a lot of really beautiful work downstairs as well if you're not ready to grapple with the contemporary stuff upstairs. So we always have a full range on. we're going to be opening, we just opened because this is airing next week, a show in the PS room with Jeffrey Maris, which is part of the NE8, and it's a sort of collective artwork that he created called AZU 2020. So that's on show in the project space. And then on the top floor, we have the National Exhibition, which is over 50 artists. And there's also an annex to the National Exhibition taking place at Hillside House, which is 25 Cumberland Street. And there's another group of artists there. So there's a lot to see. And like I said, it's always free on Sundays. So you can bring just the whole family and run around the grounds and run around the verandas and look at some art. And it's a pretty awesome day out. So I would suggest everyone does that and comes to the National Art Gallery and engages with a really amazing production. We have an extraordinary talented group of artists in this country and in the diaspora. And we're so pleased to showcase them. So please come and take a look. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Colson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.